is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
No clinch for you, Vancouver Canucks. They squandered the opportunity yesterday. Los Angeles Kings over the Vancouver Canucks. 3-2 is the final score there. How about that Kopitar line, huh? Adrian Kempe, Quentin Byfield. When that line is on, one of the best in the NHL, period. No Elias Lindholm last night as well. We'll get into the Vancouver Canucks situation here in a couple of moments. But eventually Vancouver is going to clinch. We just thought that they might be the first team to clinch a playoff spot. Also last night, pretty exciting game between the St. Louis Blues and the Vegas Golden Knights. This one goes into overtime. Jonathan Marchessault with the overtime heroics. Small in stature, big in production in big moments. Jonathan Marchessault, 2-1 is the final score there. Now the Vegas Golden Knights are up on the St. Louis Blues for that final wild card spot in the Western Conference by 5 points. So we ask this question. Are the Blues done? Is it over for the St. Louis Blues? Is a 5-point gap too much, especially considering you are chasing the defending Stanley Cup champions? Vegas now have won 6 of their last 8 games. There was an overtime penalty shot in this one as well, which was certainly exciting. Logan Thompson stopping Pavel Buchnevich, who, much like you, I thought was icing this one. When he made that quick little shoulder fake, didn't think for a second, okay, Logan Thompson's going to bite here. Buchnevich is going to score in St. Louis. It's going to make things really interesting in the extra frame. But then about, 15 seconds later, Jonathan Marchessault ices it. 2-1 in overtime. That's the final score. Only 2 games on the board last night around the NHL. Tonight, 12 games and a massive one in Washington. And we'll talk to Tarik El-Bashir coming up at the bottom of the hour about this massive game. It is Washington. It is Detroit. Seemingly the only 2 teams who want that final wild card spot in the East. And it seems like they're going to be flip-flopping back and forth all the way down the wire to find out who actually gets this thing. They'll face off tonight in Washington. Also on the board this evening in a very interesting Tuesday night around the NHL. Jake Guentzel returns to Pittsburgh. The Oilers face on the Jets to face off against the Jets. 2 stumbling teams there. And the top spot in the Atlantic Division is up for grabs as the Boston Bruins face off against the Florida Panthers. Coming up on today's show, I mentioned Tarik El-Bashir will be aboard. He will join me at the bottom of the hour from Monumental Sports Network, Capitals Insider. We're going to talk about the game tonight against the Detroit Red Wings. We should probably spark some time and talk about Spencer Carberry. Like, there'll be all the obvious stuff. Charlie Lindgren, we're going to get there. We're going to get there with Alex Ovechkin as he continues to score and close the gap on Gretzky. But we should also talk a little bit about Spencer Carberry as well, the head coach of the Washington Capitals, who, if he can get the Capitals with their awful goal differential into the playoffs, there will be some Jack Adams attention. How about that? There'll be some Jack Adams attention for Spencer Carberry. Elliot Friedman joins in hour two. He's at the Maple Leafs Devils practice, one of 12 games on the board for the in the NHL this evening, so we'll get the very latest. And we should probably get the very latest on a couple of people here. Mitch Marner on the ice, and also Matt Murray, netminder. What is the latest there? So that's coming up with Elliot in hour two. Also, John Cooper, Tampa Bay Lightning head coach. Tampa's won 7 of their last 9, 4 of 5 on this recent road trip. And I was the idiot who, on trade deadline, being interviewed by NHL.com, when they asked me, give us your hot take for the remainder of the schedule, I said off the top of my head, Tampa doesn't make the playoffs. Hot take, dumb take, take your pick. That's what came out of this mouth, folks. And that's your program today. And plenty to get to. And by the way, Martin St. Louis, and this is a very good thing, Marty St. Louis returns to the Montreal Canadiens bench as head coach this evening. They'll face off against the Colorado Avalanche. He had stepped away for personal and family reasons. One has to assume that everything is okay now in the St. Louis family, and that is great. So we're very happy for Martin St. Louis, and happy for the Montreal Canadiens. They get their coach back this evening against the Colorado Avalanche, who are looking for their 10th win in a row. This is an absolute buzzsaw of a team, as we saw most recently on Sunday, as they went down 4-0 against the Pittsburgh Penguins and said, okay, let's crack our knuckles here, boys, and get back to work. 5 goals later, an overtime winner by Jonathan Drouin, and all of a sudden, the Colorado Avalanche are the talk of the NHL. Matt Marchese is aboard here to kick off the program, who I understand is wearing Bob and Doug gear, or for the older set, the Kenora dinner jackets, as it were, which looks very spiffy with the touch of gray on the side. It's a Rocket Richard Grecian formula rip from about the mid-70s, and your George Peros mustache. It's quite a look you got going today on 360 here, Matty.
It's very Canadiana. How about that?
It's very Canadiana.
I just need a denim jacket.
Pour some maple syrup on you. It's a good look, bud. It's a good look. To start with, you want to play this Bruce Cassidy clip. So the head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights talking about Jonathan Marchessault. He's the hero last night, although I really did think that Buchnevich had that. When he did that little pause and that little fake, you're like, okay, Thompson's going to bite here and Buchnevich is going to score this thing. Marchessault scores the overtime winner. Let's hear from Bruce Cassidy, Vegas Golden Knights coach, after the OT win yesterday. Here's Butch on Marchessault.
He's a big goal type of guy, Marshy. So I didn't think that line generated. I don't think they had their best night, but he hung in there and got the job done. And we're using him a little more maybe than in the past in overtime and with the goalie out in certain situations. And he tends to respond. He's always going to rise up to the moment. That's one thing about Marshy. No matter if he's had a great game, an average game, or somewhere in, you know, or a poor game, he's always going to be ready to go when it's, you know, the bright lights are on. And tonight was no different.
All right, there's Bruce Cassidy. By the way, a line that really stood out, the line with Pavel Dorofeev, William Karlsson, and Anthony Mantha last night looked really good. Anyhow, your thoughts on what you saw on that one last night, Matty? I thought it was a pretty eventful and there was like a nervous energy around, because I think everyone understood that, you know, if St. Louis wins this thing, all of a sudden they're within striking distance, like legit striking distance of the Vegas Golden Knights. And if they don't, then they're getting punted to the I think they might be done conversation bin.
Yeah.
What'd you make of it?
Yeah, 100%. And I think from the flip side, from the Vegas perspective, it's, oh boy, now they can get into a top three spot in that Pacific division. Maybe they could even overtake LA. I mean, they're tied on points with LA. LA has the tiebreaker right now, but they could catch Edmonton, who's riding a two-game losing streak right now. They play Winnipeg tonight. Like there were so many little stories in that. What about Logan Thompson and you know, performing in the absence of Aiden Hill? And what does that mean going forward? And how long is Aiden Hill going to be out? I thought it was a good hockey game. Certainly more eventful than the other game last night, which was very low event for two periods anyway. And so I thought it was good. By the way, the Logan Thompson save, just the acrobatics of the whole thing, and then flashing the glove, and it looked very 80s. I feel like it touched a part of your heart, Jeff, watching him make a save like that.
When it did, and you know who it reminded me of right away, considering he's a right catch goaltender?
Mike Palmatier. Oh, I was going to say Mike Palmatier.
Oh, no, not Palmatier. See, Palmatier would have just completely flailed on the save and maybe done like a sort of backwards dive, nesty plunge kind of thing into the net. Grant had that as part of his game, but he was a little bit more conservative with the antics. That's why I did love Palmatier, though. Palmatier was all over the ice and dynamic and diving and flopping, and man, was he ever a fun goaltender to watch. Man, did I ever love Palmatier. No, but that looked like a Grant Fuhr type save to me, Matty. Yeah. Did it not to you, that Logan Thompson save?
Especially you mentioned being right-handed. I think that was the key part there. And then I'm thinking like, okay, this is going to be a really good overtime. We're going to get the full 5 minutes here, because it was a really tight checking game for the majority of it. I mean, it did go into overtime. And then Marchessault ends it. And the first thought I had in my head was, boy, oh boy, Jonathan Marchessault is going to make a lot of money this summer. Like, even if it's on a shorter term deal, he's going to make some money. Like, a nice increase on a $5 million a year contract, because he's, you know, that's 39, I think, right now. He's having an incredible season. And on the heels of what was a great playoff last year, as we all know, he, for one of those guys that really kind of blossomed later in his career, man, is he ever fun to watch. Yeah. And when he gets, even when he just shoots the puck, like, for a small guy, boy, can he really rip it.
Yeah, he really can. I wonder how much, because again, like a contract's still not, like an extension is still not done with Jonathan Marchessault here. Like, I don't disagree with you that he's going to get a nice little bump here. My only question is it going to be
where?
With Vegas?
Yes.
Like, you look at Noah Hanifin, and we all understand, like, Noah Hanifin, his preferred destination was Tampa, and they couldn't come to an agreement. But now, listen, you'll be sure that Kelly McCrimmon, general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights, is working on Noah Hanifin and, you know, pointing out, much like Tampa, it's a consistent winner. Great environment, great place to live. You wonder if Noah Hanifin extends with the Vegas Golden Knights. And then you wonder how much money, if he does extend, how much money is left over for, don't forget about, it's not just Jonathan Marchessault, it's Chandler Stephenson, if they choose to keep him into the mix. And let's not forget as well, they're adding a Tomas Hertl salary.
They sure are.
Now they're going to lose, they're going to lose some salary here with, you know, Alec Martinez, et cetera. But, you know, at a certain point, there's only so much cap wizardry one team can pull off, Matt Marchese. So the thing about Marchessault is, though, and I don't know how much, like, I don't know how much pressure by way of sentimentality this management staff feels to the the original Golden Knights group.
Doesn't he feel different though?
He's one of them.
That's
my heart talking though. That's my heart saying, like, yeah, of course he feels different. But then you think about, like, I've always described, and this is a compliment. Like, first of all, there are people in Vegas that I've been told hate when I use this one word about them, but I mean it as a compliment, and that is ruthless.
Yeah.
This is a team that is ruthless about winning. If they can move their program ahead an inch, they will do it. They are ruthless, and I mean that as a compliment. And I don't think they let sentimentality get in the way. I don't think they let anything get in the way. Listen, we saw that play itself out with Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yep.
I don't think they let anything cloud their minds or cloud their judgment or cloud their decisions. I think this is a team that's like, we have this much amount of money to spend. How are we going to do it as efficiently as possible? How can we maybe bend the CBA to work to our advantage like any smart team would? And I don't think that they're bogged down by, well, he's an OG, we have to keep him regardless of the price.
Yeah.
Like, maybe other teams would feel that way. I've never had that feeling about, you know, this team owned by Bill Foley. As much as Foley is a, you know, wonderful, lovable, great owner as well, this is a guy that likes winning. And so does Kelly McCrimmon, and so does George McPhee. Like, these guys are sharks. Like, ask any agent, for example, how they enjoyed their dealings with George McPhee when he was a manager. He was ruthless. Like, anything he could do to help his team win, he would do. There's no room for sentimentality at all. That's where I think the Marchessault thing is complicated, because I'm with you, Matt. I think, oh, he's an OG, you got to keep him, fan favorite, look what he's done for the franchise and the organization. I don't think Vegas cares. If this isn't a number we can live with, so be it.
Yeah.
I kind of get the feeling that's the mentality. And that's why they're so successful.
And I
agree, disagree.
No, I agree. I can't argue with the results. I mean, they won a Stanley Cup last year. They went to the final in their first year. And they're competitive every year. The year they didn't make the playoffs was because literally everybody got hurt. Like, they could not keep anybody healthy. It was constant trip to the emergency room with that team. But now, honestly, like, I understand that this is a business. It's a business for the players. It's a business for ownership. I understand all that. The Marchessault thing to me is so fascinating because I know the other ones were, like, you know, like Riley Smith, they decided to move on from, and Marc-Andre Fleury. It's a long list. I don't know what it is about Jonathan Marchessault, but he just feels different than everyone else. I don't know why, but that's what it is. Now, maybe the Hertl thing is part of the process of moving on as well. Maybe they acquired him knowing that we're going to bring a younger player in here who has term on his contract and say, you know, Jonathan, you've been great to this organization. We got to move on, right?
You know, the thing about Hertl, though, I always thought that the presence of Hertl would most affect Chandler Stephenson.
Yeah. And maybe
not
both.
Not so much Jonathan Marchessault, just because it's a different position.
Yeah.
But again, yeah, the money is the money. You're right. Like, how much money you're spending here on Hertl. But again, they have $9 million in cap space. I think the first question that you have to ask yourself is, does Noah Hanifin stay? And if so, at what price?
Yeah.
and then you work backwards from that.
Yep.
Anyhow, Vegas is very much pulling away, and Vegas is very much starting to threaten the Los Angeles Kings, who have now won four games in a row. Most importantly, the game last night against the Vancouver Canucks. And again, that top line. And by the way, it's like it seems impossible, Maddie, for the Los Angeles Kings to lose a game when Victor Arvidsson's in the lineup. Like,
the,
oh yeah,
Arvidsson's
in, they're going to win. Streak continues. But that top line, like I said at the beginning of the year when they really first started to heat up, we make a lot about, you know, lines like Colorado's top line or Dallas's top line, etc. Man, when Kopitar, Kempe, and young Quinton Byfield are firing, it's one of maybe the best in the NHL, with all due respect to those other lines. Tampa's top line, they're fantastic, and we saw it on full display yesterday.
They were really good. And the Byfield part of that line, I think, is what really makes it go, because, and they were mentioning it on the broadcast last night, it makes Anze Kopitar play at a little bit of a different pace. And Adrian Kempe is a wonderful player. I love Adrian Kempe. He's certainly not as fast as Quinton Byfield. But it does make Anze Kopitar play at a different pace. And what it allows is Anze Kopitar can slow the game down, and at the click of a button, that line can just turn it right on, and then the speed factor kicks in. I think it's a really nice compliment. And I think it's also a nice compliment to the evolution of Quinton Byfield. For the longest time, we had the discussion, like, is this guy going to play center? Is he? Now you look at him and say,
He is. Eventually. But he's fine
as a winger. The big body with the speed, who can use a little bit of physicality. I think it works right now while Anze Kopitar is there. I think for the longest time, we just had the question of, like, where does he fit into this lineup at center? It's like, okay, but hold on. Let's put him on the wing and then see what happens where he fits in the lineup. And he's fit like a glove. He's been fantastic. He's a really good, really good passer as well. I like watching him play. And Kempe just, I just love watching Adrian Kempe shoot. Like, that's my, I just love watching him shoot.
I'm going to say something really distasteful right now. And
okay.
Here we go. What Byfield needs is an injury on the Los Angeles Kings to get a center spot right now.
Yeah.
Because he's not taking any other center spots until Anze Kopitar ages out. So barring injury, he's a power forward. He's on the wall.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
He's a winger.
Like, it's a, he, and he does it really
especially
well
right now. But he is, he is a center. Like, he's going to, like, when he actualizes, as good as he is now, they're still better from Quinton Byfield, and it's in the middle where he has more responsibility and you can see him do more things. But, you know, you look down the middle right now, you know, Philip Deneau and Anze Kopitar and Pierre-Luc Dubois, good luck. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen for Byfield yet.
Yeah, I had another thought watching that game yesterday. And I'm watching it.
Sure.
And I'm like, Trevor Lewis feels like he's been around the league 30 years.
Yes.
And I'm like, and I was trying
that
to look.
That was.
Like, 963 games, an incredible career. Like, we talk about the players getting to 1,000 games and how that is, like, such a big notch for them. I'm watching going, like, I still.
Yeah.
And he's 37. He has not turned 38, but I feel like Trevor Lewis has been in the league literally forever.
I ever tell you my Trevor Lewis draft, not mine. Have you ever told you the Trevor Lewis draft story?
I don't think so.
Okay, so this is the 2006 draft. Eric Johnson goes first overall to the St. Louis Blues. Trevor Lewis. Now, we make a lot in this draft, and rightfully so, at what happened at number 22 in the first round. That was the Philadelphia Flyers.
Mm-hmm.
That was Claude Giroux.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Bobby Clark forgot Claude Giroux's name. Now, this story, man. So this is when, so before the draft, Ron Hextall had left the Philadelphia Flyers to join the Los Angeles Kings in their front office with Dean Lombardi. And this is after, obviously, you know, being in, you know, scouting meetings and prospect meetings all season long, which is why I always... I don't know if you can make a rule about it, but I always find it awkward when, you know, managers leave one organization for another organization right before the draft. Because although you're not supposed to, I mean, you're taking like the year's worth of brain trust along with you. Anyway, so Hextall goes to Los Angeles. Now, the player that I was told that Bobby Clark wanted at 22 was Trevor Lewis. and, you know, center are from Des Moines in the USHL, strong, like, and Bobby Clark always wanted to build his teams.
Not from the net out. Position.
Well, not from the net out, but I'll ask me my theory on that when we're done.
I know that one, and I love it.
Okay. Okay, you know that theory.
Yeah.
Goofy conspiracy theories about the Philadelphia Flyers roster construction. So Trevor Lewis is the player that I believe Bobby Clark wanted, and many of us believe that Bobby Clark wanted. Hextall goes beforehand, and at number 17, the Los Angeles Kings get up there and select Trevor Lewis. And so, as it's described to me on the draft floor, Bob Clark is, you know, staring daggers at the Los Angeles Kings table because he just took their guy. That was the one they had targeted at 22. That was the one that they wanted. Now, the player after which the Philadelphia Flyers wanted, as I'm told, was a defenseman by the name of Bobby Sanguinetti, who played with the Owen Sound Attack of
Ranger.
The OHL.
Yep.
He goes one. He yeah, Ranger. Yeah, you remember? Yeah, New York Rangers. So one pick before the Philadelphia Flyers. So that's why Bobby Clark was doubly PO'd when he went up on stage. Not only did the Kings take Trevor Lewis, but also the Rangers, again, another direct rival here, just took the pick that Clark wanted right after, and that was Bob Sanguinetti.
How did that
and
turn out?
Instead, they just. They just drafted some scrub by the name of Claude Lemieux. Claude Giroux played almost 1,200 games so far in the NHL and, you know, 350 goals. So, yeah, some scrub. He went backwards into drafting Claude Giroux.
Yeah, that draft year could potentially have 14 guys that play 1,000 games. Like, that's pretty good. Especially when you look at how that first round turned out, it was very up and down. Like, when you talk about Sanguinetti, Leland Irving was also drafted in that first round by Calgary. It's a pretty good list of guys that, I mean, Jeff Petrie is, of that list, he's played 926. I think Jeff Petrie is going to get to 1,000. So it's pretty impressive. But yeah, watching that game last night, I'm like, Trevor Lewis feels like he's been around forever. I thought he was older than what his age would tell us is not the case. I mean, he's older by hockey standards.
Same age as Jordan Staal.
Yeah,
I know. He's still rocking in Carolina.
I know. It's wild. I can't even get out of bed in the morning.
Well, you haven't spent your entire life like these athletes have, taking care of their bodies.
God,
and,
no.
You know, watching, you know, what they do with it at the gym and what they put inside of themselves.
But it's also way more physically demanding than what I'm doing every day, too. That's what I'm saying. Like, these guys are, they're Adonis.
Your body is your life.
Well, my body's a milk bag.
But your body is your life. Okay. I want to get to something here. So we talked about clinching scenario yesterday for the Vancouver Canucks. So they squander it.
Yep.
Or I shouldn't say squander. They hit pause. Like, eventually Vancouver's going to clinch here. There are four clinching scenarios tonight. So the Rangers will officially clinch if they beat the Flyers in any fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or if they get 1 point against the Flyers and the Red Wings lose to the Capitals in any fashion and center, there's like a whole bunch of different contingencies.
Yeah.
The Florida Panthers will clinch a playoff berth if they beat the Bruins in any fashion and any of the following occurs: Red Wings lose to Caps in any fashion, Flyers lose to Rangers in regulation, and Flyers lose to Rangers in overtime and shootout, and the Capitals lose to the Red Wings in regulation, and. Hurricanes can clinch a playoff berth if they defeat the Penguins in any fashion, blah, 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 blah. And the Boston Bruins will clinch a playoff berth if they defeat the Panthers in any fashion and the Red Wings lose to the Capitals in regulation. I'm not going to run through all of these because I respect our viewers / listeners too much to bore them to death, more so than I already do. Let's just say there are four teams that can clinch tonight.
Mm-hmm.
The Rangers, the Panthers, the Hurricanes, and the Bruins. And a special one tonight between the Boston Bruins and the Florida Panthers, which has, you know, direct ramifications, obviously, to the third place team of the Atlantic, who will see an action against the New Jersey Devils tonight, and that's the Toronto Maple Leafs. Up for grabs tonight, top spot in the Atlantic. Now, does this turn into a flip-flop down the stretch? Probably, but this is a head-to-head competition of two teams that we saw in a very emotional series, first-round series last year in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, there's a number of great games tonight. Like,
oh, yeah.
Detroit-Washington, we'll talk to Tarek in a couple of seconds. Boston-Florida, Oilers and Jets, two stumbling teams right now. Jake Gensel returns to Pittsburgh to face off against the Penguins. Penguins still reeling after that collapse against the Avalanche on Sunday. Tonight's going to be a good one. Tonight's going to be a real interesting night. Which one do you have your eyes on here? Or is it just the obvious Detroit and Washington?
I think honestly, Jeff, I can't really give you one good answer because Vegas and Nashville is also in that conversation, like jockeying for position in the wild card. Nashville could be making a push to, you know, top three in the Central. I mean, here's the other thing. Rangers and Phillies are a really good game too, and Washington, we keep talking about Washington in the wild card. Like, they can catch Philly. They're only 2 points out and they have a game in hand. Like, this is very much in the conversation. I kind of poo-pooed the races yesterday, but it is actually very interesting. Even that matchup, Boston and Florida. I know I'm kind of going all over the place here. It's bad radio. But anyway, sorry. But the Boston Florida one for me is the one that is the one I'm looking forward to the most because I just like the way those teams play. I feel like they play a playoff style like all the time. And that to me is what makes what do you talk about all the time? Styles make fights. Well, this is going to be a fight. I don't think these teams like each other particularly well. I know they're jockeying for position in that Atlantic division. To me, that is a playoff type matchup. Kind of like what we saw between Vancouver and LA last night. I think it's going to be tight checking. I think it's going to be very physical. I think for teams like that, they don't even need to flip the switch because they're already playing that style. So when you get to a point in the season like it is now, they're in preparation mode for the playoffs. I think it's going to be a really good game.
You know, you bring up a good point about the Philadelphia Flyers, that at the end of this, as much as we're talking about, you know, who wants the spot here, Detroit or Washington, they may both get a spot, and the odd team out might be the Philadelphia Flyers. And I think that's why we saw, you know, in some ways, although I do think he was trying to protect the organization and protect Sean Couturier in a bizarre way here, we saw John Tortorella and how he talked about his captain last week, or how he talked about his netminder this weekend as well by just sort of shrugging his shoulders and not pouring gasoline on anything. But the thing about the Philadelphia Flyers is, and again, I don't like handing out wins ever. That's why when I look at games in hand, I just treat them as, well, it's just a game in hand. I don't say, well, they're going to win. They have two games in hand, so that's 4 points they're going to get. I don't hand out wins. When you look at the Philadelphia Flyers' schedule.
Favorable.
It's kind of good.
It's very favorable.
It's kind of good. Like, I know they have the Rangers tonight, and then it's a steady diet of, wait for it, folks, Montreal, Chicago, the Islanders, the Sabres, the Blue Jackets, Montreal again, Rangers again, the Devils, and they finish up against the Washington.
That Washington
Capitals.
Florida, the Washington Philly matchup in the last game of the year could end up being
that
a decider.
Could be juicy.
That's pretty good. Way to go, schedule makers.
That one could be. Yeah, Steve Hatzepetros.
Okay,
congratulations. You have the crystal ball.
Can I? Okay, I have a gripe with Steve. Can I?
Okay, what's that?
Okay, so. We both live in the city of Toronto, so the Toronto Maple Leafs are obviously very, you know, relevant. They play the New Jersey Devils 3 times in their remaining schedule, and they played the Montreal Canadiens back in October, and then they didn't play them forever after that. But they'll play the Devils 3 times in a matter of whatever it is, 2.5, 3 weeks. I have issue with this, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Don't take it up with him. Take it up with the individual teams. Teams all make their avails, like they're doing it right now, right? Teams, let you know who's available at what time, for which games. Like the Matrix, I would love to watch, and I'm sure it's all done a lot more sophisticated now than it was like 30 years ago, but I would love to watch the schedule be put together. Like, you know how they always do those fast frame things at the Winter Classic?
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the root to the fruit, here's how we put together the rank. I'd love to see them do that. I would just love to see it, even though I know it's old, it's too much of an old school thing. I'd love to see them map that out. Like, in my head, the way that Steve Hatzepetros puts this together, it's because I'm still a child in my brain. Like, they have like one big map on the floor. And there's like teams' names that they're putting all over the place,
like
trying to figure out what's going to work when. That's kind of how I know it's not like that, but in my tiny little brain, that's kind of how I want to think about how Hatzepetros puts the schedule together. That's kind of how I do it. But don't blame him.
No, I
blame the team.
I just have a gripe with the schedule.
Like,
that's all.
Everybody does.
You know
everybody
what,
does.
You know what
Everyone's
I think of?
Right, but the schedule.
You know what I think of? This is you talk about your childish brain. Mine's even more childish. I can almost guarantee you that. Have you ever watched the movie Horrible Bosses?
No.
Okay, so
what's that?
Okay, it's a movie about these three guys that try and kill their bosses. I'm not getting any ideas. Relax, everybody here. But there's a point. There's a point where they're trying to
clear suicide by Matt Marchese. Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to send you the picture. Basically, they're trying to figure out how to kill all three bosses and all this thing. And there's like, you know, string on the end of a on a tack board, and they've got strings going all over the place, and it's like in 600 directions. That's what I imagine that Steve's office looks like when he's trying to put together a schedule.
Attention, Ryan Favreau, our immediate director here. That was from Matt Marchese, not from Jeff Merrick. That was from Matt Marchese paging Ryan Favreau, not Jeff.
He already knows how I feel.
And
that
will take a break. Fair. He knows how we all feel about him, and that's fine. Congratulations on the promotion, boss. Love you, Favreau. Coming up, Tarik Al-Bashir comes up at the bottom of the hour here in a couple of moments. We'll talk about the Caps and the Detroit Red Wings. Elliot Friedman in hour two, and the Tampa Bay Lightning head coach, John Cooper, stops by at the bottom of hour two. Plenty of programs to get to. Busy night around the NHL as well. 12 games on the board. We'll talk about a huge one in Washington between the Capitals and the Red Wings. Final playoff spot, the wild card. Wild card two up for grabs tonight. Tarik Al-Bashir in moments. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. Back in a moment.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. People really enjoying the conversation about Jonathan Marchessault, by the way. He has a lot of fans out there, even outside of the Vegas Golden Knights market. And I think that's one of the things that I think Marchese was getting to in a couple of seconds ago. One, this guy's going to get paid large and deserves it. And two, a number of teams will come calling for Jonathan Marchessault as well. And as I understand it, he also has young children who are very competitive, elite-level hockey players. So I think he goes out there on a regular basis with. And that's always great to see in a visual that that warms a lot of our hearts. Park that conversation for a couple of moments. But yes, there are a lot of Jonathan Marchessault supporters out there, whether they're Vegas Golden Knights fans or otherwise. Now, 12 games on the go around the NHL this evening. The marquee matchup features a battle for the second wildcard spot in the Eastern Conference. And the interesting thing about it is we look at this and say, which one of these two teams is going to get in? And maybe the answer is both, depending on what happens down the stretch with the Philadelphia Flyers. Here to help fill in some blanks is our good friend Tarik Al-Bashir, who's been on this program a number of different times. Always appreciate it. A monumental sports network, Capitals insider. He joins me now. Tarik, how are you today?
Hey, Jeff. Doing great, man.
Where are you with all those beautiful hats behind you?
That's a great question. So I am in our brand new Monumental Sports Network office. Just opened a few months ago. Multi-million dollar facility, offices, studios for the Wizards, for the Capitals. I mean, talk about state of the art. I mean, new cameras, you know, screens that I haven't even figured out how to use yet, you know, touch screen monitors. It's pretty amazing. And so this is like a conference room that has a TV in front of me. It's got Kobe and people celebrating etched into the glass next to me. And like, I think every Capitals hat ever made. It's pretty neat.
Oh, I'm trying to find like my favorite from the 70s here. And I think the one that's directly over your right shoulder might be the one for me, Tarik. I'm looking at this and I think it's impossible. If you're watching on 360, you know what I'm saying right now. Tarik Al-Bashir in front of all these really cool Capitals hats. And yeah, that's the one. As you just move a little bit to your left, that's the one, the sweet spot right beside your cheek. There it is. Oh, look at that. An absolute thing of beauty. That's a beautiful one. Okay. When you look at this game tonight, you know, we tend to assume that it's going to be one of these two teams in the second wildcard spot. But if you're the Washington Capitals here, aren't you really chasing two teams? Not just the Detroit Red Wings for that second wildcard spot, but depending on what happens with the Philadelphia Flyers, and they'll play the Rangers tonight. Now, they do have an easy-ish schedule the rest of the way. Washington has the opposite. Washington's got a tough schedule down the stretch here. Could you not make the point that they are, as much as they're chasing a wild card, they're also chasing third in the Metropolitan, the position currently held by the Philadelphia Flyers?
Absolutely. This last month has just been such a roller coaster ride for this Capitals team. But you're exactly right. I mean, I see two pathways to a playoff spot. Like you're saying, I mean, if beat Detroit in regulation tonight, they'll go up 3 points on the Red Wings with a game in hand and another meeting later on this season. If the Flyers lose in New York tonight, the Capitals will catch them for the third, and the Capitals win, they'll catch them for the third spot in the Metro with two games in hand. So, I mean, the thing to look at, they also have the tiebreaker in terms of regulation wins. The Capitals have a tiebreaker over everyone around them. So, you know, it depends on which model you look at, Jeff. But, you know, I look at my money puck a lot to see kind of like, you know, the playoff chances, percentages. And right now, I believe the Capitals are almost at 60%. I mean, it's looking really, really good. But you did nail it. The Capitals have, I believe, the 10th hardest schedule the rest of the way. The Flyers do not. Detroit's schedule is no picnic either. So, I mean, who knows what's going to happen? It's a silly game played on ice. There's bounces. There's injuries. There's things you can't predict. But, I mean, it does feel like things are trending in the right direction for the Caps.
So, one of the things that I think we all look at and say, how is this possible? And, you know, Brian McClellan had a funny exchange with Elliott at the general manager's meetings where he said something along the lines of, do you want to talk to me about our goal differential, Elliott, or something along those lines? I think Elliott said, can I ask you a question? And McClellan said, what is it about our goal differential, Friedman? Dash 27. Teams this deep into March, bordering on April, and, you know, the final few playoff spots shouldn't be in the conversation at dash 27. When you look at this record, like, you're right, like, there's a couple of freakish things here. One, as you just mentioned, they have the first tiebreaker over everybody, the regulation wins, and they have 28. That's beaten everybody. When you look at this record and you look at this team, do you not say to yourself, how? And then do you then take the next step and say, okay, I'm going to try to figure out how? What do you do with this, Tarek?
Well, I have spent many a night trying to figure out what's going on with the goal differential. I mean, if you go back, Jeff, and you look at the schedule in its totality, I mean, on the surface, it's they win close games. This is still a veteran-dominated team that knows how to dial it up and how to, when they can sniff a victory in the second or third period, lock it down, so to speak, and win 3-2, win 2-1, win 4-3. They've been pretty good at winning in shootouts. So they've won a lot of close games, but when they lose, they get blown out. I mean, like 8-3 against the Red Wings in their building just a little bit ago. 7-3 against Toronto just last week. I mean, like, I don't really have a theory on this, and you know, I wish I had a better answer, but I do wonder if, again, veteran-laden team, and I wonder if there are nights when they're down a couple and they're like, yeah, we don't have it tonight, guys. You know, we got a big game in 48 hours. Let's let's pace ourselves. Yeah. I don't think it's happening, but it just boggles the mind. It's really, really hard to explain, but I'll tell you this. They are nails in those tight games and have gotten really good at shutting out, closing down opponents in the third.
That's the one thing I think about with the Washington Capitals. When they lose big. But when they win, A, they do it in regulation, and B, they're really comfortable in close games. Whether it's 2-1 or 3-2 or 4-3, they're totally comfy there. Which leads me to the next question, which is, how should we be feeling about Spencer Carberry through all of this? You know, rookie head coach with the Washington Capitals. How should we feel about this coach? Because I'll be honest with you, if he gets the Capitals into the postseason here, not saying he's going to get it. I know that there's going to be a lot of noise, certainly for Rick Tocchet and what he's been able to do. I've got John Cooper coming up in the second hour. I always think John Cooper should be in consideration. There have been noises made previous about John Tortorella. I think Andrew Burnett in Nashville is going to get a lot of love as well. But if Carberry can get the Caps into the postseason, does he get some attention here, Tarek?
He absolutely should, in my opinion. Now, I don't get to vote for Jack Adams. I vote with the writers. which is what I've done most of my career. So I vote for the other awards. But if Carberry gets this team into the postseason, he absolutely would get my vote for the Jack Adams. And that's not just because I cover him every day. When I look at that award, look, it is impressive to see what Rick Tocchet is doing with a loaded Vancouver team. But to me, the essence of the Jack Adams is the guy who does the most with a team that maybe wasn't expected to do what it accomplished. And you can't tell me that people thought back in October or November, oh yeah, this is a Capitals team that's going to make the playoffs. Absolutely, people did not think that. And then you get to the trade deadline and you subtract players. They didn't add anything. They lost Anthony Mantha, you know, one of their best goal scorers. They lost Joel Edmondson. They traded Evgeny Kuznetsov. Yeah, Evgeny had not played for a little bit while in the player assistance program. But, you know, that's taking two big players. And if you want to go back even further than that, Nicklas Backstrom walked away eight games in. I mean, this was a team that it looks radically different now than it did at the start of the year. And and they've had to change their playing style and other things to kind of adapt for a team that doesn't look at all like the lineup that they scribbled down in, you know, in probably an erasable pen or pencil back in August. And what has impressed me is the adaptability of Carberry. Like I said, he's had to change the way things have worked around here on the fly. I mean, he's had to adapt his system. You know, the power play right now is gangbusters. He's found a way to squeeze the most out of these veteran players like Alex Ovechkin, who's gotten back on track, John Carlson, who's the second highest player in the league in terms of time on ice every night. But he's also found a way to get a lot out of the kids. And when I say kids, you know, I'm talking about Hendrix LaPierre and Connor McMichael and Rasmus Sandin. He is maximizing these guys. He has found a way to connect with these younger players and get them playing at a high level, at a playoff caliber level, in a very short amount of time. So the job he's done here, I mean, you know, people talk about, you know, the team didn't go out and make a big move last offseason. Well, the big move was getting Spencer Carberry.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting as well, you know, it was only a couple of weeks ago at that Saturday afternoon press conference where, you know, general manager Brian McClellan essentially said, wave the white flag, we're going with the kids, and it's about investing in the future, and here they are now finding themselves in a playoff spot. Listen, I know it's only been, what, 14 or 15 games where we've seen Ivan Marashnichenko, but what have you seen in him? That because he's nowhere close to being an actualized NHLer. He's still in that state of potentiality, not actuality yet. But I'm sure you've had glimpses. I'm sure you've had moments where you've said, okay, there's the potential right there. What do you see in Marashnichenko?
I see a player who has an elite shot. He's got a motor. He's got sneaky physicality. And I was fortunate enough to work a game for TNT recently against Toronto where I was down on the glass. So I was in the corner so I could get a really close look. The Capitals were getting were not playing well. They were not playing well, and they were getting handled by a much better team. Marashnichenko competed so hard all the way to the end, and that's what told me this guy has the potential to be a legit middle six, maybe top six player in this league for a long time. I mean, he was still throwing snow on his stops. He was still hammering defensemen on the forecheck down in my corner. And when he would go back to the bench after, you know, a shift that didn't, he was shaking his head and slamming a stick. Now, they were losing, but you could tell it did not sit well with him. He was mad about the situation. And just the intensity that he brings, look, not every player is going to wear their heart on their sleeve, but I'll tell you, those guys who do, they usually go pretty far, and that's what I really like about Marashnichenko's game. I think he could be, you know, I don't think he's Ovi's replacement, but I think he could be a first or second line winger in this league for a long time.
He looks great. Let me ask you this one. Agree or disagree? This team is going to go as far as Charlie Lindgren takes them.
Agree 100%. Again, getting back to just this roster isn't what they thought it was going to be. And then you subtracted, you know, three key players, four if you count Backstrom, from you know what this lineup was looking like back at the start of the season. And Charlie Lindgren has, in my opinion, has been arguably the best goaltender in the league over the last 2 months. Now, he started out great, had a little bit of a lull along with the team in January, but he's back now. And, you know, I look at the analytics, Jeff, and, you know, his goal saved above expected has been top two or three for the past month and a half. He is stopping shots that ordinary goalies do not stop. And so when you have a goalie who is playing at the elite level that he is right now, that tends to paper over some of the deficiencies on this roster. And there are some deficiencies. This roster is a roster that is in transition. You know, Brian McClellan is going to take another hack this summer to, you know, at making the improvements that it so desperately needs. But in the meantime, while you have these young guys and you've got a few call-ups from the Hershey Bears who've spent most of their careers down there, you got this goalie who is just a late bloomer and you know, just competes his butt off every night. And I think that has an impact, and it influences the way the guys play in front of him when you have a guy who's just competing after every single puck, every single shot, the entire game long. And, you know, kudos to him for taking this opportunity and running with it. He's got another year on his contract at a very team-friendly $1.1 million. He might be the best deal in goaltending. And also, kudos to McClellan for not trading him at the deadline. I'm sure there were some teams that were kicking the tires that had some interest.
Oh, yeah, for
but,
sure.
You know, that certainly would have gutted this team. This team wouldn't have had a chance. Darcy Kuemper has not had the season that he would have liked from himself and certainly the team expected from him. So Lindgren has done a great job of kind of stepping into that 1A role, and he's been good.
I'll tell you what, Tarek, love having you on. Love the hat wall behind you, and going to love this game tonight. Washington Capitals and the Detroit Red Wings, second wild card in the East, is up for grabs. Thanks so much, as always, for stopping by.
Yeah, anytime, Jeff.
The great Tarek Al-Bashir, who joins me on a regular basis here when we talk Washington Capitals. That Tarek tends to be our default from Monumental Sports Network, Washington Capitals insider. Interesting looking facility. If it's half as cool as that hat wall behind him with that 1970s hat that I love so much, it looks great. One thing that I do want to follow up on as well, you've heard me talk about this before. You know, one of the conversations that is always that's really stuck with me this season more than other seasons is from a couple of months ago where someone said to me, we're having a conversation about the Hart Trophy. If you've listened to this program long enough, you've heard the story before. So stop me if you've heard it. We're having a conversation about the Hart, and this person said, you know who the Hart Trophy winner is this year, or who deserves the Hart Trophy? And I said, who's that? He says, the team that has the $1 million goaltender that can win you games. That's the Hart Trophy winner. That's the most valuable player. And we just talked about Charlie Lindgren and how he's a $1 million goalie that's getting wins and taking the Washington Capitals maybe to a playoff spot here. And Tarek mentioning that, you know, he might be the best value, goalie value of anyone in the NHL. There's another one that jumps, well, there's a few, and we think of, you know, Alex Lyon with the Detroit Red Wings, but the other one that jumps to mind right away as well is Anthony Stolarz, who's on the final year of a $1.1 million deal. He's an unrestricted free agent as well. And if he gets there, you know, there'll be plenty of teams looking at him. The $1 million netminder that can get you wins. That is the true MVP of the NHL. Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. Matt Marchese, 12 to choose from. What you picking?
Let's go with the all-Canadian matchup. It's the Oilers at the Jets. Puck okay. line is Oilers minus 1.5. Winnipeg is 12-4 straight up in their last 16 against Edmonton. Sorry. The Oilers are 1-4 straight up in their last 5 road games. The Jets are 14-4 straight up in their last 18 home games, and the under has hit in 5 of the last 7 matchups between these two teams.
Excited this morning for the Winnipeg Jets because not only was Rick Bowness on the ice, but so was, in a regular jersey, Gabe Vilardi. When you talk about important players to teams, I'm not saying Hart Trophy good, but let's just extend it a little bit here. Gabriel Vilardi would help that team a ton right now. We'll see what happens. These are two teams that are on losing streaks right now. The Edmonton Oilers had a tough weekend in Ontario, losing to the Maple Leafs and the Ottawa Senators. The Winnipeg Jets losing three games in a row and looking bad in pretty much all three of them, although some signs of life on Sunday. Losing 4-1 to the Devils, 6-3 to the Islanders, which was an abysmal performance, and 3-0 to the Washington Capitals. Colorado and Dallas, 4-point gap for first place in that Central, and Winnipeg wants to close that gap. Thank you very much, and don't look now, but the LA Kings are 1 point shy of the Oilers for second spots in the Pacific. That was Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook, bet local. Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts on the other side.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Want to thank Tarek Al-Bashir for stopping by the program in Hour 1, Elliot Friedman, moments ago. We turn our attention now to one of our favorite guests around here or any parts. He is the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning and one of the smartest and one of the best coaches that the league has to offer. He is John Cooper. He joins me now. John, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
Hey, my pleasure. You know you've made it when it's just your name is the headline of the show, the Jeff Merrick Show.
I tried to fight it. I wanted to call it Rink Fries, but they wouldn't go for it. They wanted to make it a sort of marketing exercise, I suppose, John, and I relented. There's a sort of element of, oh, look, there's my navel when you name your show after yourself that I want to try to avoid. But anyhow, by the way, congratulations. Yesterday, the 11th anniversary of your hiring as a head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And like we all, like whenever, you know, whenever a new coach gets hired or someone gets fired, we always turn our attention to Tampa and say, look who's the Energizer Bunny here. It's John Cooper. When you, before we get to, you know, this year's edition of Tampa and down the stretch and playoffs and players, I want to ask you about Nikita Kucherov specifically. When you look back at the 11 years and go back to, you know, the transition into the NHL, like what are some of the moments, obviously Stanley Cup, but what are some of the moments that jump into your mind right away?
Well, always game one. I'll never forget the hiring process, the coming to the game. I missed the first game, so I came in while the game was going on. And then I remember one of the probably as nerve-wracking a moment I've had. Take away, like, you're counting down the last 60 seconds of the potential chance of winning a Stanley Cup. That's nerve-wracking. But was when I addressed the team as the head coach, basically 11 years ago today, and or whenever I addressed the team, it was like a day later, but coming in the room and seeing, you know, the Montreal Canadian head coach Marty St. Louis staring right at me, and there was Vinny LeCavalier and Steven Stamkos. I go down the list of players, and everybody had just finished a game, and here I am, you know, never coached a day in the NHL, and addressing the team. And I remember that just being a just like, what am I going to say to these guys? So probably the most nerve-wracking moment I remember. Game one, we won in overtime against Brodeur, was the goalie in New Jersey. So that was always kind of a highlight. So every time I see him, that's my one jab I have. Then he gets to jab me about everything else that he's won in his career. And and then, you know, like you think back, like 3-on-3 overtime wasn't in the league when I started. Like those are little things that you think about, like, wow, maybe I have been around for a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's been a wonderful ride. And to be honest, I know it's weird to say it's year 11, but it still feels like year one. And that's probably what's been great for me.
Let me ask you about 3-on-3 because, you know, it was an issue at the managers meeting in Florida, everyone trying to fix something here. I know that fans may not enjoy, you know, a whole lot of, you know, neutral zone regroups. But I kind of look at that not as the cause of anything, more just the effect of, you know, coaches not wanting players to take frivolous shots in overtime because of, listen, things like it could lead to odd man rushes the other way. And one of the things about overtime, when it first started, we wondered, okay, what are coaches going to do with this? And I'll tell you, John, it felt as if at the beginning of 3-on-3 overtime, it was almost as if coaches said, don't know what to do with this, get out there and have fun and just go play. And then eventually coaches figured, okay, this is what we need to do and this is the kind of game we need to play. And it sort of settled into a basic structure. Can you take us back to the beginning of 3-on-3 for you and when you first started to get a handle on what we need to do here?
So you've got probably the right guess, because another little known fact, we played in the very first overtime game. It was us against Philadelphia. Yeah, so if you go back and watch it, it was 2 minutes of complete chaos. None of us knew what we were doing, and it was like 2-on-1, breakaway, 3-on-1, and it just went back and forth. And if my memory serves correct, I think Jason Garrison got the goal. It was so much fun. Nice. But then I sit here and look. So our last two games on the Western trip, we played LA and Anaheim. Both went into overtime. LA scored within 12 seconds of a terrible coverage on us. Gavrikov scored. And then we played Anaheim, and they went on a 3-on-1 break. They kind of botched it, and Cirelli waited for Hagel, and they went on a 2-on-0 break and scored. So that would be my defense to all the naysayers saying, oh, there's too much regrouping. Gary, hopefully you're not listening, but if I was going to do something, I would just add 2 minutes to it. I don't think the overtime's broken. I think once that first shot happens, it just takes one odd man rush to trigger four more. And, sometimes there's some regrouping, and sometimes there's – I get it. You know, the guys are running around in the end zone and stuff like that, but the regroup is the actual thing that triggers the rushes. You can entice bad changes. There's so many things that can happen, but it's the guys, you know, when they're just keeping in the zone the whole time, it's actually really hard to generate any offense. You know, unless you're going to, like, set a pick or something like that. So I actually don't mind overtime. I think they should just extend it by 2 minutes, and it would probably, what is it, like 70% of the games get decided in overtime, something like that. That'd probably go up 10% if they added two more minutes.
Yeah, the ECHL has a 7-minute overtime, as you well know, and I think that there was probably some conversation about it, but that would take an even bigger conversation with the NHL Players Association, and not so sure that that's going to happen anytime soon. But the one thing as well about the overtime that I really do find fascinating is, like, I look at a player like Jacob Slavin on Carolina, and I think he's one of the most effective overtime players in the NHL. Just the way that, you know, the reads that he makes, specifically when, you know, Aho and Natchez are with him. I mean, two, you know, elite offensive players. Mm-hmm. But just the way that he's able to read 3-on-3. I mean, he's not the big sexy name on the blue line for Carolina, certainly. But here's my question to you. On your Tampa Bay Lightning team, like, we'll focus a lot 3-on-3. Oh, just get Kucherov out there as much as possible. Just get Stamkos out there. Get Braden Point out there. As much as you get Victor Hedman, throw them all out there as much as possible. Who's your secret weapon 3-on-3 that we may have overlooked?
So that's another thing too, like, just a little sidebar to the extra. If you add two more minutes on, you're probably getting at least 2 to 3 more players into overtime that you wouldn't normally do in a 5-minute. You nailed off all the names, the guys that get to play, but I think I just named two of them. And I don't think Anthony Cirelli gets a ton of credit. You know, he's not, if he's ever north of 40 points during a year, it's a great year for him. And, you know, kind of known as, you know, the guy that plays, he checks and does all these things. But as you well know, he has scored some of the biggest goals in CHL history.
Oh.
And some of the biggest goals in Tampa Bay Lightning history. And, you know, like, everybody remembers, like, Braden Point scoring the, you know, big goal in Game 5 to win us this, you know, get us over the hump against Columbus in that series. Well, we had to pull the goalie and score with less than a minute left. And who got that goal? You know, Cirelli. And so kind of goes a little bit unnoticed, some of the big goals he scores. And then the other one would be Brendan Hagel, who's just a ball out gamer in everything he does. And so he does a lot of great things for us.
I'll tell you, you know, you mentioned Cirelli a second ago, and it's one of my favorite people to talk about. And you're right, when it comes to CHL, you know, the final goal ever at the Old Colisée in Quebec at the Memorial Cup, beating Leon Draisaitl's Kelowna Rockets. And there's another game that I think of often, And it's a really gutsy call by you to sit down Nikita Kucherov. It's a game against Ottawa. It was a very high-profile benching, and it was Cirelli to the rescue, who scored the overtime winner. And I do want to ask you about Nikita Kucherov, who's one of – well, maybe – actually, do you have a quick – that's one of the touchstone for you as well. Do you have a quick memory of that night, that game against the Ottawa Senators, where Kucherov was watching and Anthony Cirelli was winning it for you guys? That was a bold move by you.
Yeah, that was probably a big moment. I can say it now, and Cooch and I we've talked about it now. You can laugh about it now. But that was a big moment. It was 2019. It was after we got swept by Columbus, and we really kind of changed a lot of the – we didn't need to change our game plan and our strategy. We probably needed to change our mindset and attitude, and I was a part of that as well. And I just remember yeah, it happened to be playing against Ottawa. It happened to be on national TV in Canada. You don't think about those things at the time, but just the way everything worked out. And, you know, we took a gamble. We were behind. We came back to win. Tony was obviously a big part of that. But it was probably a little bit of a watershed moment for myself as a coach, for a lot of us. And you know, you just, we're pretty close, keep things close to the vest type of team. We don't air a lot of stuff out. But anytime you sit a player for, especially a player of the stature of Cooch, it's going to be known. And I know Johnny was calling the game. He was the one that really caught it, that was going on. And but in the end, like, as you know, you talk to your players, he's going to go right back out there. And I think everybody needs to have some sort of adjustment at some point. Cooch it's a rarity for him because he's so talented and he gives us so much and he works so hard, but that was probably a moment that we grew as a team together, and eventually we went to 3 straight finals after that.
Not too shabby, and helped make a lot of Hall of Famers in the process. Speaking of which, and we just mentioned Nikita Kucherov a couple of seconds ago, what do you think we should know about Nikita Kucherov? Like, he is a, you know, he's not someone that, you know, outside of, you know, post Stanley Cup celebrations, we don't know a whole lot about, except to watch him on the ice, where he's a magician. And I've always said, like, he's a thief. You know, Nathan MacKinnon barges down the front door, Nikita Kucherov sneaks in the side door. Both empty the contents of your house, but Nikita Kucherov's a thief in the night. What do you think we should know about him?
I would say Kucherov is... Okay, so, you know, you got that saying, well, he's the last guy off the ice. The only one guy can be last guy off the ice. Or he's the first guy to the rink. Well, only one guy can be that guy. Cooch is the most prepared player in terms of how he prepares his mind, his body, his game, and all these things. And I say this in the sense that he's such a student of what his craft is. And so... We could play for 10 months. We could play the middle of June, and then Cooch will take maybe 7 to 10 days off, and then he rents the arena out himself, and he goes every single day. Well, like, let's say 5 days a week, and he goes on the ice. And I'm not sitting here saying he skates, you know, wallies the whole time. He may be just in his tracksuit, and all he's doing is visualizing pucks come around the wall and how he can take a puck off the wall, because there's nobody better on the power play on the half wall than Cooch. And people, I don't think, understand how hard it is to take a puck off the wall on your backhand and be able to sling it up to Hedman under a stick, under pressure, which he can do with ease. But the only reason he can do it with ease is it took him hours and hours and countless hours of work, and he does it all summer. And to watch him do that is remarkable. And I got nervous for a long time because I'm thinking, oh, my God, he's going to be worn out. But he just, it's his preparation, and he doesn't let anything slide. Like, he doesn't kill penalties, but he watches the PK meeting and pretty much can tell you what goes on in the PK probably more than the guys that are actually doing it. He's three steps ahead of everyone. And I always say, you know, because people say, well, you know, well, give me an argument why Kucherov should be MVP. And I was like, well, obviously I'm biased because I coach him. But there's some wonderful players in this league. You've named them, McDavid, Matthew. You can go down the list of special players. But if I was going to pull, and I know this from some of these players, if I was going to pull all these guys and say, who are you? Like, there's 30 teams playing tonight. Which game are you going to watch? And they'll say, we're going to watch Tampa because we want to watch Kucherov. And I think that's the greatest compliment. And, you know, if he doesn't you know, it'll be too bad if he doesn't win the MVP, but he's been, you know, Braden Point's got 40-plus goals on our team. They play in the same line and the same power play together, yet Cooch has 40 more points, which is, like, mind-boggling to me.
Yeah. He's, he, you know, the one player, you know, the player's player. It's an interesting phenomenon. You always ask people in any industry, you know, who do you enjoy watching in any sport? And, you know, it used to be, I mean, you know this, like the players would say, we love watching Marian Hossa. Like, you know, it's impossible to give him a bad pass. Like he played off his skates. Like everybody loved watching Marian Hossa. I'm with you. Like I find now that the guy is Nikita Kucherov. The one that the players just shake their heads at, just marvel at. And then you look back and go, okay, yeah, he saw that three moves before. I think you're obviously bang on about that one. Before you wrap up here, I do want to ask you about Coop's Catch. This is a marvelous charity for kids with cancer that you run, a charity fishing tournament. And I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, Wayne Gretzky came out this year.
He did. And It is amazing to me because this is probably of all the years, like Dick Vitale usually comes and is my guest speaker, but he's going through some cancer himself in his throat. So he's well documented. He hasn't been able to call basketball games, but he's getting through it anyway. So I try and get some local celebrities and people to come by. It's a charity tournament that's dear to my heart, and we put players on boats and we have a blast for a couple hours. And so I asked Gretz, if you know, would he come on over for it? And he's like, "Yep, I'll be there." I was like, "Oh, awesome!" So I have like Hall of Fame football players there. One of my favorite pitchers in the world, David Wells, showed up.
Nice!
Like, it was great. Yeah, oh yes. And Rondé Barber was there. We had the GM of the Bucks, and we just had a whole bunch of great people that were there. Tino Martinez showed up, and so you're looking at these guys that have won world championships and guys that are in Hall of Fames. And then Gretzky walks in, and then you see everybody stop. And I'm, you know, I was sitting there in my head. I'm like, how many athletes like can do it? Like Jordan, you know, Tiger. I don't know. Yeah. Like I'm off the top of my head that kind of stop other athletes in their tracks. And Gretzky was one of them. And so anyway, it was phenomenal. He came to the event where we raised a bunch of money the night before. Then the next morning he showed up and jumped on a boat for an hour and he gave his time. He spoke to the media. He got in pictures with everybody, hugged the kids. And so it was, I thank him dearly. And if he's listening to this, tell him to get a sweatshirt out of my backseat of my car. Cause when he put the Coop Scouts one on, I've still got the sweatshirt and I want it out.
I love it. The great one on and off the ice, on and off the boats. Listen, John, it's been a lot of fun. Good luck tomorrow against the Bruins. Good luck down the stretch as well. And into the playoffs with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Always appreciate our conversations. Thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jeff. And if I'm talking to you a few months from now, it's probably a good thing for our team. So hopefully.
Amen, brother. Okay, there he is. John Cooper, the great John Cooper, head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, a team that's won 6 of their last 8, peaking at the right time, as you would like to say, despite the fact, you know, as you mentioned, that last overtime with Vladislav Gavrikov and a really nice overtime goal. I got to give it up to Los Angeles Kings defenseman on that one. Thanks to everybody who took part in today's program. As always, you just heard from John Cooper, head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Before him, Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and 32 Thoughts. Tarek Al-Bashir from Monumental Sports. Washington Capitals insider there. It is a huge night. Washington Capitals facing off against the Detroit Red Wings. Tune in for that one. Our entire crew as well. Our producer is Matt Marchese. Our technical operator, Lance Kennedy. Our camera operator is the great Jen Rolnick. All the mistakes were made by me, not those people that I just mentioned. Have a great evening. Enjoy the games. 12 of them to choose from. Some beauties as well. Playoff ramifications everywhere you flip. Enjoy it. Show's back on tomorrow.